You're listening to
WGXC Accra
Hudson Catskill
90.7 FM.
Every Thursday evening from 5 to 7 p.m., Left Bank Ciders in Catskill holds a community soup night. Every Thursday, they gather to eat soup made by members of our community, with all the proceeds benefiting a local cause. The soup is homemade, delicious, and affordable. A donation gets you a bowl, some bread, and lots of camaraderie. There's always a vegetarian soup option, and a different charity or cause gets the funds raised each week. They have held several community soup nights for your community radio station, WGXC. Left Bank Ciders is at 150 Water Street in Catskill, and community soup night is there every Thursday from 5 to 7 p.m. WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Upstate Films, where membership provides access to world-class cinema, first-run feature films, art house films, live music, and more. Plus, advance notice of close-up conversations with directors and actors and other special events at the Star Theater in Rhinebeck, the Orpheum in Socrates, and traveling around the Hudson Valley. Information at upstatefilms.org/support. That's upstatefilms.org.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Lovid in Setauket, New York. WGXC monthly supporters care deeply about Creative Community Radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
From the WGXC Newsroom, this is the WGXC Daily News. Raymond Pignone reports in Columbia Green Media that the town of Coxsackie Planning Board lost its appeal with the town zoning board of appeals to overturn code enforcement officer Ed Pebler's decision that the Galvin 9 is in compliance. The story never says what exactly the mine is accused of or what the problem is. Pignone does quote an email from Coxsackie resident Beck Anderson that said that a grandfathered mining permit in a residential agricultural zone were, and I quote, the result is bordering on an environmental catastrophe, and they, Galvin, are operating unchecked and without regard for the community they are affecting, end quote. Albany-based attorney Andrew Brick represents mine owner Sean Galvin and claimed the appeal lost on a technicality, saying, and I quote, the key was whether the planning board brought the appeal too late, and they brought it well past the 60 days. It was too late, and the appeal could not be sustainable, end quote. The Galvin mine is the former Hillicost Stone Quarry, after President and CEO Gary Hillicost sold the mine to Galvin in 2020. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Liz Montgomery reports in Porcupine Soup that once again a CSX crew was in Coxsackie at the train bridge over Mansion Street on January 23rd to, and I quote, fix the leaking chalky gray substance in the westbound lane of the viaduct, end quote, according to Village Mayor Mark Evans. He said the visit only came after, and I quote, countless emails, phone calls, and two in-person meetings, end quote. Several years ago, a man walking with his wife and baby in a stroller was hit in the head with concrete falling from the bridge, with an ambulance taking him away for numerous stitches. Evans traces the problem back at least 7 years, and last summer, Senator Chuck Schumer was trying to get the issue resolved. CSX previously said that the liquid leaking from the bridge was mud that had seeped into the structure. Read more about this story in Porcupine Soup. Mid-Hudson News reports that Columbia County again came in with the lowest unemployment rate in the region at 3.2% in December. Overall, the December 2023 regional unemployment rate in the Greater Hudson Valley region was 4.5%. Greene County came in at 4.3%, up from 4.1% in November, and much worse than the 3.2% the year before. Columbia County was at 3% in November and 2.4% in December 2022. Dutchess County reported a 3.6% unemployment rate last month, and Ulster County was at 3.9%. And you can read more about this story at Mid-Hudson News. And that wraps up the WGXC Daily News. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Wednesday, January 24th. Local early morning temperatures range from 29 degrees in Tannersville to 34 in Skodak and Copake. Regional average soil temperature is 33 degrees. We have snow reports in. Jefferson got an inch, Knox got 1.3, and Richmondville got 2.5 inches of the white stuff. And speaking of which, a winter weather advisory remains in effect for all of eastern New York and western New England into this morning. Be aware, everyone has the chance for some hazardous conditions. Everything is possible today with odds leaning towards freezing rain. The surface temperatures will be the deciding factor. This could lead to dangerous travel conditions and power outages. The warnings regarding such should last longer for elevated and colder areas, but that will be hard to predict even looking at the conditions right now this morning. So, avoid travel if possible. Short distances might be okay if your area has transitioned all the way to rain, but drive slower than you think you should and be on the lookout for surface ice because it can appear suddenly and without warning. By dark, just about everyone should be rainy. Travel caution will still be prudent, especially since it is likely to be foggy for the afternoon commute. We get a high of 39 degrees, which doesn't count because temperatures keep rising slowly overnight and we see 41 degrees. Tomorrow will still be rainy, but with a high of 46. Overnight, we see 40 degrees and hopefully, finally, the rain will stop Friday afternoon when we get a high of 51. Saturday, so far, is looking dry with a high of 44. Sunset today will be at 4:44 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 7:11 a.m. Looking way up, we see a G1 class storm watch is on as a couple Hadouken are expected to grace our planetary neighborhood for the rest of the week. X-class flare chances are at 10%. Plasma winds will be average at 456 kilometers per second with an average density of 6 protons per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently okay below 4 megahertz till dark, then fair across the board overnight. There are no chances for aurora tonight. The current sunspot number is 123, and this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
Commuter fight, and in the morning with your toast and mama lady, oh, who listens to radio, no matter if it's summer, winter, spring or fall, who listens to radio, only 150 million, 150 million people.
Hello and welcome to Dim the Lights with Jenny and Amanda here on WGXC 90.7 FM, ACRA. We are a twice monthly movie radio show. Yes. Crazy. Amanda and I, this is my friend Amanda, we're working on getting her verbal. We're going to get there.
Yeah. Hello. Test, test. Hello. Hello.
It's bouncing. Let's try.
Bouncing a little bit.
Oh, there
hello.
We go. That's
test,
a little better.
Test, test. Hello. Hello. 1, 2, 3. Good evening. Good evening. Hello. Test, test.
Wow,
I think we're good.
Consummate professional. We are here on WGXC 90.7 FM, ready to talk to you about movies.
We're going to tell you about what's playing in the local theaters, and I'll start with what's playing at the Wyndham Theater in Wyndham, New York. Just in case you're interested, there is something on their website that's Wyndham Theater Presents The Chosen Season 4. It looks to be a TV show about Jesus.
Wyndham Theater really does be playing those ones. I'll say no more.
All right. Other than that, we have the Mean Girls musical, Wonka and the Boys in the Boat. You can find out more at WyndhamTheater.com. That's WyndhamTheater.com.
All right, and now I'm going to tell you about what's playing over at the Crandall Theater in Chatham. It's just two things, so easy to remember. It's The Boy and the Heron and Poor Things. And if you're interested in seeing either of those films, you can head on over to CrandallTheater.org.
Gorgeous, gorgeous. All right, I'm going to tell you about what's playing at the Spotlight Theater in Hudson. That's the theater on Fairview Avenue. We have ISS, which looks pretty dumb and fun.
International Space Station.
Yeah, exactly. It stands for International Space Station.
Oh, I like that.
Mean Girls musical, Soul, The Beekeeper, Night Swim, Wonka, and Poor Things. You can find out more by going to thespotlighttheaters.com and selecting Hudson from the drop-down menu.
I was like, what is The Beekeeper? I've never heard of that. And then I remembered that I have heard of that because you explained it to me in extreme detail this weekend.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. All right. So now I'm going to tell you about what's playing at the Upstate Films locations, starting with the Star Cinema, which is the location in Rhinebeck. We have American Fiction, Origin, All of Us Strangers, and Yearning for Peace and Justice, a teach-in on Israel and Palestine. And then heading on over to the Orpheum Theater, which is the location in Saugerties, we have The Boy and the Heron, All of Us Strangers, Mean Girls the Musical, Poor Things, Ferrari, and Lou Reed, The King of New York, multimedia presentation. And if you're interested in any of those performances, or performances is not the right word. Wow, I got caught up on the multimedia presentation about Lou Reed.
Performances on screen.
Performances by actors in front of a camera.
Frankly, that counts.
If you're interested in any of those movies, you can head on over to upstatefilms.org.
Amazing. I'm going to tell you about what's playing at TSL in Hudson, otherwise known as Time and Space Limited. We're coming to the end of the month, so these are just the things that are playing for the rest of the month, but keep a lookout for their February calendar. We have Gaslight, Casablanca, Notorious, Autumn Sonata, and Jeff Koons, A Private Portrait.
Okay.
Oh, and also Anatomy of a Fall. So be sure to check those movies out at TSL and go to timeandspace.org to find out more about showtimes.
All right. I'm going to give you one last little theater location, which we don't usually talk about, but there is a pretty significant theater in Kingston called NCG Movies, and they do a lot of like the big releases. So I'm just going to tell you about it.
Why not?
So this week we have American Fiction, Anatomy of a Fall, Anyone But You, Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom, Barbies, shockingly,
okay,
she's back.
All right.
ISS, Mean Girls the Musical, Migration, Night Swim, Oppenheimer, I guess, is back again also.
Might as well get that money while you
can. Origin, Poor Things, The Beekeeper, a real movie, The Holdovers, Which brings me to you, and huge news, you can still see Wonka at NCG Cinemas in Kingston.
I mean, Wonka is also playing at... Okay, there we go.
Oh.
Looks like I'm actually mic four. That really helps a lot. All right.
Oh, yeah.
Looks like Wonka was also playing at Wyndham, so
don't forget.
So you can see Wonka up the mountain, and you can see Wonka down in the valley, so.
Maybe both, if you wanted to.
People like it.
People like it. But if you wanted to know more about any of those showtimes, they have a complicated URL, so I would say just Google NCG Cinema and then put in Kingston.
Thank you. from the 2023 album Since Time Is Gravity. That was Moontide Chorus from Natural Information Society.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Luck and being born in the right zip code in the United States of America should not be the determinant of where you end up in the United States of America. People who are fortunate, like I have been, have a responsibility to stand up and serve.
Minnesota Congressman Dean Phillips on his long-shot bid to take the Democratic nomination from President Joe Biden. In spite of not being on the ballot, the president has won the New Hampshire primary thanks to a successful write-in campaign. With less than a quarter of the votes counted, media outlets also declared former President Donald Trump the winner over former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley by a sound but not huge margin. Trump looks likely to get more than 52% of the votes in a high turnout election, a result sure to increase calls for Haley to drop out. North Dakota Governor and former candidate Doug Burgum is now stumping for Trump, preparing for a race against the incumbent.
When Donald Trump was president, our nation was safe and our nation was prosperous. Joe Biden, his weakness has led to war. His weakness and his appeasement has led to our adversaries like Iran and Russia making hundreds of billions of dollars selling oil to China.
Observers say China isn't actually buying oil from Iran now. The most recent economic data shows a very low unemployment rate and slowing inflation, along with improving economic confidence. The U.S. ranked 31st for global voter turnout, but some states are considering requiring citizens to go to the polls. Many high turnout countries like Australia have what's known as universal voting, and Miles Rappaport with 100% Democracy says it could change the incentives and make politics more moderate.
Right now, the currency in the United States for campaigns and political parties is to gin up your own base as much as you can. Some people say it's enraged to engage, and then try to depress the turnout of your opponents.
Senate leadership is sounding a bit more confident about a bipartisan deal on border funding and foreign aid. Minority Leader Mitch McConnell says divided government has succeeded in forcing what could be a successful compromise.
If this were not divided government, we wouldn't have an opportunity to do anything about the border. In fact, I don't think we'd get 60 votes for any border plan if we had a fully Republican government.
Meanwhile, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer says hard-right Republicans have only made a difficult conversation harder because they want an issue, not a solution.
Many of them are motivated by naked partisanship. Others are taking cues from Donald Trump. These hard-right saboteurs talk on and on about the need to fix the border. But now they don't actually want to see a bipartisan solution on the border.
Massachusetts State Ballot Law Commission has rejected an effort to disqualify the former president from that state's ballot. Tom Hodgson is the chair of the Trump campaign in Massachusetts.
This whole issue is really based on no substantiation that the president was involved in any kind of insurrection. There is no conviction that he's done anything wrong in regards to that.
I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. We reported January 16th on a federal court finding that maps drawn by Michigan's Independent Citizen Redistricting Commission diluted black voting power and must be redrawn. An appeal to keep the existing maps was declined Monday by the U.S. Supreme Court. Michigan voters created the Independent Commission in 2018 through a constitutional referendum to put an end to gerrymandering. Detroit civil rights groups objected to the commission's proposed maps during 2021 hearings, but the MICRC's consultants concluded the districts met federal Voting Rights Act guidelines. A federal court panel disagreed, finding that the commission diluted black majority districts. The court ordered 13 Greater Detroit House districts be redrawn by February 2nd and 6 Senate maps by April. The MICRC asked the U.S. Supreme Court to stay the order, but SCOTUS declined on January 22nd. But there's an interesting partisan twist to the story. 19 black voters representing 13 districts were plaintiffs in the case. The Michigan Advance reports that they were represented by a Republican former Solicitor General for the state of Michigan. And it was mostly white conservative suburbs that were redistricted with largely black, more liberal Detroit neighborhoods. Michigan's House is composed of 56 Democrats and 54 Republicans, and all are up for re-election in 2024. We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
From the WGXC Newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Jamal Cutler reports for Columbia Green Media that Columbia County Democrat Party Chair Sam Hodge and Dutchess County Democratic Party Committee Chair Michael Dupree endorsed Dee Dee Barrett over Claire Cousin in the June 25th primary election for a local assembly seat. Barrett is the incumbent and Cousin is currently Hudson's first ward supervisor. Barrett, 73, said, and I quote, "I'm honored to be endorsed by the chairs of both county Democratic committees in the 106th Assembly District. Both Sam Hodge and Michael Dupree know how hard I work for the communities I represent in Columbia and Dutchess counties, and their endorsement reflects recognition of my inclusive and effective approach to my job. I'm grateful for their support," end quote. Cousin and other activists have criticized Barrett for not backing progressive measures addressing the affordable housing crisis, and Barrett is now talking about the issue. And I quote, "Addressing the affordable housing crisis is one of my highest priorities. I recently brought Assembly Speaker Carl Hestey to Columbia County to show him the unique challenges our region faces in building affordable housing. With his support, we were able to secure $3 million in funding for two not-for-profits in the area, Columbia County Habitat for Humanity and Hudson River Housing, to support the construction of affordable, energy-efficient housing," end quote. So far in 2024, Cousin has outraised Barrett in campaign contributions, $4,857 to $3,910, according to campaign contributions publicly reported as of January 23rd. And you can read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Brendan J. Lyons reports in the Times Union that it has been almost 3 years since cannabis was legalized, and New York regulators are just now getting around to writing the rules to let anyone 21 or over grow a limited number of plants legally. Regulators with the State Cannabis Control Board are expected to discuss a provision that would allow retail cannabis store owners to sell starter plants at their January 24th meeting. Individuals will be allowed to have up to 6 cannabis plants, 3 mature and 3 immature, in their gardens. New York is a few months away from the fourth outdoor growing season since cannabis was legalized in the spring of 2021. Growers are limited to 5 pounds of, and I quote, "cannabis flower that has been trimmed from plants which have been cultivated in or on the grounds of said person's private residence," end quote. Retailers selling starter plants will be required to have an active nursery dealer registration certificate from the State Department of Agriculture and Markets and label each plant by strain, expected date of harvest, and a warning to keep out of reach of children. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Jack Arpey reports for New York State of Politics that Steven Greenberg, pollster for Siena College Research Institute, said, and I quote, "There's good news and bad news edition of this poll," end quote, about Governor Kathy Hochul's standing among registered voters. Her 45-42% favorability rating is up from a 40-43% rating in November, and it is the first time it has gone up since February 2023. Hochul's job approval rating was also up to 52-43% from 48-44% in November. But on some specific issues, including health care, mental health, and making living in New York more desirable, voters have concerns. Greenberg said voters are not confident at all that she will succeed in making those issues better from a voter's point of view, end quote. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow. And now, here is your WGXC weather update. Your forecast for the next 2 days, well, on Wednesday, there will be rain and freezing rain and sleet is likely before 9 a.m., then a chance of rain and sleet between 9 a.m. and 10 a.m., then rain is likely after that. It will be cloudy with the temperature high near 37 degrees. And on Wednesday night, rain is likely. It will be cloudy with the temperature low of around 35 degrees. And on Thursday, more rain, mainly after 1 p.m. It will be cloudy with the temperature high of around 46 degrees, and there will be more rain on Thursday night, mainly after 1 a.m., with a temperature low of around 41 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC, 90.7 FM, radio for open ears, in Greene and Columbia counties.
Love. That lives in you.
best love she ever known. Sweet kisses on collarbones. So sweet notes in the eye. Love, love, understanding, demanding, a flooding. So it sweet was a rush of feelings so coming over me. And it was suffer free. Open your arms. And it was heart certain. And it was the strong. And then your sway down. Tone let your grace shine. The way it held the melody, the way it sung the song, it was true beauty, and I wanted to dance, and it's love, and it's freedom, I wanted to shine.
That was Irreversible Entanglements with the 2023 song Free Love from their Protect Your Light album.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
So the MPAC season has already begun, the spring 2024 season. There are still many fantastic events still coming up. And to help us get this overview, we are now joined by MPAC curator Catherine Adams. Welcome to Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
Hi, Sina. Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be on with you.
Yeah, it's so wonderful. You've already had a few really fantastic events. I believe it was three. And there's a full season coming up. Because there's so many events, we won't be able to touch on like all of them and give them the attention that we want. But first, like, is there a theme this season that you've noticed?
Sure. Yeah, I'm happy to touch on that. So there's no explicit theme, but I do think there are some kind of interesting common threads across some of the programs. I've noticed a lot of artists, especially the ones that I'm working with, are thinking about ideas of like haunting. Like, there's a program later in our season with a choreographer named Onye Ozuzu, who's thinking about how like architecture haunts the body, and she's working with like digital media to explore how like a trace of a performing body might remain in the space. Very interesting multimedia work. We have a couple of talks that kind of play on that idea. So someone in Peli Grietzer is thinking about how AI might kind of tell us something about what art and poetry kind of give us in terms of meaning and kind of the way they construct a world unto themselves. And he has played a lot with thinking about ideas of like a vibe, these kinds of like ambient aesthetics that we can't quite explicitly name, but kind of stay with us, haunt us. So things like this, and there's other projects as well. I'll just quickly name like Lihia Lewis, A Plot of Scandal has a bit of that. And actually several projects kind of, I think there's a little, crossover in that sense, this kind of interest in like technology as something that like carries past presences with it into the future.
Yeah, the technology is such an interesting, I think a lot of people are having that conversation and really looking at the complexity of it. Like, it's not only good and it's not only bad. And so what does this look like, and where do we need to be critical, and where can we really embrace it and see it also bringing accessibility to a lot of people? And so an event that MPAC and the Sanctuary is collaborating on, which we're very, very excited about, is the Theogene Cuthand event, which is one day at MPAC and one day at the Sanctuary. So I want to briefly touch upon that before we give the others a little bit of time.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that's going to be a great event. And as you kind of gestured towards, it emerges out of this collaboration iEar Presents that emerges from RPI and the arts department there. And then MPAC is a collaborator on that. So yeah, it's a great chance for us to kind of work with the Sanctuary. And the filmmaker that we're featuring is named Theogene Cuthand. And Theo is an Indigenous artist and is interested in things like kind of queerness, how queerness expresses itself. He plays with an idea that he calls indigiqueer. So some of his past films are about that. He's also quite interested in kind of forms of like ecology and both in positive and negative forms, as you were kind of, you know, talking about before, thinking about extraction, but then also thinking about kind of like indigenous ecology in a future-oriented way. So at MPAC, that will be a screening and talk. And then, as you mentioned, a workshop at the Sanctuary. One cool thing about Theo's practice is he also has done video games. So I believe that that may work itself into at least the workshop side and maybe also the MPAC as well, MPAC event.
So as one of the curators, what is your process of seeking artists, and what are some of the things that you look for in an artist? And I'd also love just like a little bit of your background in like as a curator.
Oh, yeah, that's a great question. Thank you for asking. Yeah, I mean, I always think curating is such a multifaceted role. I always think of it, or like I like to say, it's like a research-based practice. So in addition to like, you know, all the organizational stuff that like we do, I really think of myself and I think my colleagues as kind of like mediators. Like we work with production, but we also mediate to the artists, we mediate to the public. And then in terms of selecting projects, I am constantly plugging into like different artistic scenes. You know, I do a lot of studio visits with artists. That's like a big research tool for me, like literally just like on the ground, like meeting people. I try to see exhibitions, see performances. Seeing things live is great. And sometimes even if one doesn't, like if I don't work with someone right away, it might start a relationship, et cetera. So that's kind of partly how I work, is on the one hand, there's a lot of like in-person, like presence with artists. And then in terms of discovering new people, it's always like a process. Sometimes it's serendipitous, sometimes people reach out. But in general, it's like a mix of kind of a more, let's say, like not quite scholarly, but sort of like, you know, almost bookish approach to research. And then that kind of more like hands-on kind of just being out and around and keeping like the antenna out for kind of new things. And I think also, you know, I always try to sort of have a nice, like broad array of types of projects. So, you know, I look for like, I think about a seat, like composing a season, you know, like getting a different range of approaches, different perspectives. And sometimes those might clash with each other, which I think is always interesting. So like people can see one project where an artist is critical of something, and then in another, they, you know, a different artist might kind of use that technology in a more like affirming way, you know, things like this. My personal background is more, it's primarily in like the visual arts, but I also have always had a strong interest in performance and dance. And I personally trained as a dancer for many years, so I have like that, you know, personal connection. So a lot of my programming focuses in those two areas right now.
So we were kind of going over just the range of things. And I want to touch on the experience of visiting MPAC and seeing these performances there. What are the different types of experiences that a visitor might have?
That is a great question. I mean, we present a huge range of projects. So, and it's hard to generalize, actually, because part of what we always try to do is to really, like, you know, play around and experiment with formats. So, you know, oftentimes in general, you know, we work by venue. So, like, when we bring an artist in, they're interested in working in a specific venue. Oftentimes, audiences will see the outcome of what is actually a longer production residency. So you may see that either as a work in progress, which gives you kind of a window into an artist's process, a little window into that production stuff that is often not so public at MPAC, or you may see something that, you know, is just kind of a one night event where we're bringing someone in from outside of the area apart from production. So it's very hard to sort of give a format, again, just because we, you know, we do many, many different kinds of projects. But I'd say that our sort of big focus is really to, you know, mediate that production work through the public program. So that stuff that, you know, feels a little like esoteric or like it's not, you know, people don't know what's going on. The events are kind of where a lot of that gets through, and you can kind of see a little more of like what's been going on while we haven't had events. Yeah.
So we have about 2 minutes left. Are there some other events that we didn't get to touch upon that you would like to highlight?
Yeah, well, I think one I'd love to mention briefly in more detail is the Lihia Lewis project. So that's a big dance work that's showing in February, February 16th and 17th. So that's about a month away. Lihia is an amazing performer. She's a really kind of experimental mover. So she's a choreographer, but also very kind of theatrical, great sense of staging. And that'll be a great piece to see. It's very rare actually to see her in the US these days. So we're really excited to have her. And while we're here, I'll maybe just mention a couple events we have this week too. So we have a couple of talks happening tomorrow and Thursday.
And this will rebroadcast on Wednesday morning. So it's at Wednesday night.
Oh, okay. Thank you for that. Yes. So that'll be, I guess, tonight and then tomorrow for those listening live. And Marina, the first talk on the 24th, Wednesday, is Marina Rosenfeld, who will be sharing a bit about her residency work with us. She's doing some production now. She works between sound and visual arts. And then the day after that, on the 25th, will be a performance studies scholar who is thinking about movement and the ways in which dance works and choreography might kind of resist time, like, and playing around with what that might mean and how artists think about time within movement practice.
What a wonderful program you have coming up.
Thank you.
Might be hard to memorize this. So where is the best way to get the most up-to-date information on what's coming to MPAC?
Great question. So our website is great. And I'll just, that's MPAC, empac.rpi.edu. You can see our full range of programs. In addition to our kind of like curatorial projects, you'll see campus, you'll see research. And all of that is generally fully open. And then we also have like Instagram, if you're on there, so you can follow our social media page. I think it's the same MPAC, you know, _RPI. So those are a couple ways, and newsletter also. So you can find us on a few different formats.
Catherine Adams, what a pleasure to have you. And I hope that you'll come back to share a little bit more in depth about some of this incredible programming that is coming to MPAC.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. I would love to come back in the future too.
Well, thank you so much. Have a great rest of the day.
Thanks, you too.
We're talking with Liza Schwarzwald, who is a member of the New York Immigration Coalition, and they have a proposal to try to give more resources to work and families. So Liza, what is the proposal?
Sure. So something that we've noticed, obviously, throughout New York State is that families are having a real problem with affordability. They can't afford their housing. They can't afford food. They struggle with childcare. So what we did was we looked at all of this and we looked at our tax code. And we realized that there were some changes that we could make to that tax code through what we are calling the Working Families Tax Credit that would make that a lot better for families. So what the bill does is it takes three existing tax benefits. So the Empire State Child Credit, which is New York's version of the tax credit, of the child tax credit. It takes the earned income tax credit, also the New York version, and the dependent exemption. And it mushes those together into this bigger, better credit that's going to give almost every single parent with children across New York State more money and more resources than the current credits do.
Now, one thing most elected officials do agree upon is we should make work pay. People who work should have enough to support their families. What type of support are you seeing so far for this proposal?
Absolutely. So, yeah, we do have a fair amount of elected support. Our two champions for this bill are the senator, Senator Gnardis, and then Assemblymember Hevesy. So they've been fighting very hard for this. And one thing that we saw last year was actually that we did see support for this expansion. We did actually win a part of this bill. So last year, as part of the Working Families Tax Credit campaign, we were pushing for the Empire State Child Credit to get rid of an exclusion that it used to have. So before this year, if you had a child under the age of four in New York State, you didn't get access to the Empire State Child Credit. So until your child turned four, you got no assistance from that credit. We said that's really silly. We know that younger children have many, many needs. Newborns have a lot of needs, formula, diapers. Families were struggling with those. So, you know, we did, in fact, get enough support within the Senate, the Assembly, and the governor to expand to the under fours for the child credit last year. So this year, we're really looking to build upon that support to make an even bigger, broader credit work. So, the Senate has a lot of support there. We have a lot of support in the Assembly. And a lot of what we're trying to do now is make sure that families all across New York and groups all across New York understand what this tax credit could do for them so that they can, you know, let their electeds know that this is something that would be helpful.
So what are some of the groups presently, you know, mobilizing to help get this across the finish line?
Sure. So we have a lot of groups that have worked on this for the last several years. So a lot of child poverty groups, groups like the Schuyler Center, like Children's Agenda, the Education Trust New York. These are groups that have pushed to do this, particularly because we've seen the effects that this has had on children. Poverty is something that we know has incredible ill effects on children's health and well-being, on their financial success, on their academic success. So we've had a lot of child groups. We've had pediatric doctors who've supported the group. We've had unions like 32BJ. We've had the Working Families Party on board. So we're really looking to broaden the scope even further. But there is a diverse group of advocates all across New York State who are supporting the bill.
So Who's opposing it?
You know, we haven't had anybody come out and say, absolutely not, we're not going to do this. Interestingly, expansions to the child tax credit particularly have a lot of bipartisan support, particularly with voters. So we don't get the kind of pushback we might get from other spaces. We hear occasionally that people talk about how much the cost will be. And I think that we like to put into perspective and say, well, one, the money that we put out through these tax credits goes right back into New York State's economy. It goes to small businesses. It goes to your grocery, your local grocery stores. It goes to your local landlord who you're paying rent to, all of these things. So when we look at this, we're really looking at something that actually does have broad support in both red and blue areas and even for independent voters. It's just a lot of strong support. But what we need is, you know, a little bit more explanation and education about what this will actually do for families. Because sometimes people hear taxes and they think, oh, this is a bad thing, or, you know, oh, this is a complicated thing. And so we're trying to simplify that and really explain to all of our New York families, here is what the Working Families Tax Credit could do for you. And if this is something that you believe in and that you want and that would be helpful to you, you should go ahead and tell your electeds why that is, regardless of which side of the political spectrum they may be on.
Now, Governor Hochul put out her budget proposals on January 16th. I don't recollect seeing this in her budget proposal. What has been her administration response so far to this idea?
Sure. So obviously last year she did, in fact, expand the child tax credit. So we do know that this is a part of her broader vision for children in New York State. She talks a lot about how difficult her own experiences were paying for things like formula and diapers for her own children. And so I think we're looking at here just a bigger push that we need to make sure that she knows that this is a very, very popular bill. She has not directly opposed it. I think the only pushback is likely to be simply the cost again. And, you know, we are heading into an election year. So I think we're looking at some folks who are maybe just questioning what we should be spending our money on. This particular bill is a great option for really for the governor, you know, with her focus on the health and well-being of children in New York State, for our electeds who are looking to their constituents and their districts to see what are those families need, how can I help fill those needs. So I think this tax credit bill really fits into a broader vision that a lot of our electeds have talked about and that the governor has talked about. So we're really looking to just make sure she understands where this fits and how much it would, in fact, move the whole state forward for everybody.
Have other states done similar things so far?
Yes. There have been, I believe last year, I think 12 different states across the country, and I can't unfortunately tell you what they are off the top of my head, but did have expansions to their tax credits. So either their earned income tax credit, their child tax credit, or in certain places, I think Washington is one, an actual working families tax credit.
Now, of course, you know, there's been a lot of attention paid to issues like housing is very unaffordable and things like that. You know, what is the situation for a lot of, you know, working people in the state? Are they able to pay their bills?
No, a lot of people struggle. We did have a study that was done in New York City last year. It was called the True Cost Study. It was done by United Way. And what they found was,